We're back talking about Serach Bat Asher as being the Isha Chachmah who saves the city. And the role in all this Midrash stories is she's the witness to the history of the Jewish people. She's the one there. She's the one who restores Yaakov's future. And so she is given the gift of remembering the past. She is the one who is the carrier of the Masorah. So Rav Soloveitchik had an essay about this. This was his hesped for Chaim Heller. Afilu b'doro shel Moshe. I mean, this is way Bracha Jaffe in her article translates it, that even the generation of Moshe, the door, even she has some Mitzrayim, the generation where all the miracles happened. Shera mar'ot Elohim b'Sinai, they saw the vision, the vision of God at Sinai, kibel Torah, they got the Torah. Still, tzrichim hayu demut kaduma, they need an earlier, an image there. They still needed the Serach. Serach ben Asher. They needed the story of the one who sat in her grandfather's lap. No, she's the one who played with his hair and his beard. The image of his little granddaughter playing with him. Without her, that the human connection of the tradition would have been lost. And the Bnei Yisrael could not have said, this is my God and I glorify him. And it wasn't connected to the song of the past, that's part of that. I need to be know that the God of my fathers as well, my ancestors. Rak Aim Zakei, now only this old mother, this foremother. With a stooped back and wrinkled face, who played in front of the old man, Bakarlo Sab, and called him grandpa. She's the one who has this connection of all the generations, and how things go together. One generation as well, and the way she adds in there that we have talked about the pleitatso freihem in our tefillot, not just we want the scribes but actually the remnants. We need the actual people there as well. It has to be a human size, not just all out of books. And this is where Rav Soloveitchik talks about his own mother in this exactly these kind of terms over here. What is Torah Timecha? Titosh Torah Timecha. Do not abandon. Listen to the tradition of your father. Al Titosh Torah Timecha. What is Torah Timecha here? What kind of a Torah does the mother pass on? I admit I'm not able to define precisely the Masoretic role of the Jewish mother. And I might add that, yes, we have mother-father roles here, but they're not necessarily gender-specific. You can go both ways as well. And you can have women who are on the book learning and they hear the word as opposed to the actual life. I used to watch my mother arranging the house in honor of a holiday. I used to see her recite prayers. I used to watch her recite the Siddur every Friday night. And I still remember this nostalgic tune. I learned from her very much. Most of all, I learned that Judaism expresses itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me there's a flavor, a scent, and a warmth to mitzvot. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of his hand resting on my frail shoulders. Without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive.
Was there something in this week's Parsha or Haftorah that had, it was similar? Because I remember seeing something in the translation about the mother has, you get the smells of the Chagim.
Not that I know about.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I definitely saw it yesterday. Maybe I was reading something else in Shul. Okay.
Right. I mean, the Serach Bat Asher is in Pinchas, a week ago's parsha. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take a similarly. This is also Joshua Rav Soloveitchik, that there are two Masorah that Moshe transferred to Yeshua. One is the tradition of Torah learning, of Lamdu. The second Masorah, the Hod, was experiential. And you need that too. One can know the entire Masechet Shabbos and still not know what Shabbos is. To truly know what Shabbos is, one has to spend time in the Yiddish home. Even those neighbors that made up of predominantly religious Jews, today one can no longer talk of the sanctity of Shabbos. True, there are Jews in America who observe Shabbos. But there are no Erev Shabbos Jews who go to greet the Shabbos with beating hearts and pulsating souls, as he puts it. We've kind of lost a lot of that, the feeling side of it. And I'll end here. This is Chaim Soloveitchik's famous essay of Rupture and Reconstruction, talking about what happened as we all kind of moved to America and Israel, the destruction of European Jewry. We lost a lot of that personal side. This is having seen what life was like. And a way of life is not learned, but rather absorbed. This transmission is mimetic, meaning imitative. Imbibed from parents and friends and patterned on conduct regularly observed in home and street, synagogue and school. Did these mimetic norms, the culturally prescriptives, conform with the legal ones? The answer at times yes, at times no. We clearly do things that the books say not to. And we do a lot of things that the books say aren't necessary. Classic thing is the kosher kitchen. But everything we do with basar v'chalav is far beyond any halacha, which is why he's going to mention specifically. Whenever you have a question about basar v'chalav, the rabbi is going to say, oh, it's fine. Almost always. Because we're so far beyond that. And the significance of the no, that we don't obey the laws, may best be brought home. An example which we're all familiar, the kosher kitchen with the rigid separation of milk and meat, separate dishes, sinks, dish racks, towels, tablecloths, even separate cupboards. Like everyone has a separate cabinet for their milk and meat and plates of dishes, right? Actually, little of this has a base in halacha. Strictly speaking, there is no need for separate sinks, for separate dish towels or cupboards. In fact, if the food is served cold, there's no need for separate dishware altogether. The simple fact is that the traditional Jewish kitchen, transmitted from mother to daughter of generations, this is all the women's fault, by the way. Joke about how no rebbe would ever let the rabbi, no matter how gadol, to actually cook in our kitchen. Has been immeasurably and unrecognizably amplified beyond all halakhic requirements. The classic contours are the product of legal exegesis, but of the housewife's religious intuition imparted in kitchen apprenticeship. There's this rupture of this meta tradition and the traditional religious sensibility that underlies much of the transformation of contemporary orthodoxy. Zealous to continue traditional Judaism unimpaired, religious Jews seek to ground their new emergent spirituality less on a now unattainable intimacy with him than an intimacy with his will, avidly eliciting his intricate demands and saturating their daily lives with its exactions. We get more from because we don't have this sense of what people actually did. The whole shiurim, you need a really big cup, even though the actual kiddush cup of the chasam sofer was much smaller than the shiur of the chasam sofer. And the way, then his line ends with this, having lost the touch of his presence, they seek now solace in the pressure of his yoke. It's very true, but not really, because we still have Serach Bar Asher with us. Not all have been lost. Famously, just like Serach never died, Chazal said Yaakov never died. Right, this is the Maran Tanis, from Yisrael Omer Mishum of Yochanan, Yaakov Vito Lomet. Yaakov never died. And let's say, ask him, he saftu sefdaina, v'chantu chantaya, v'kabru kubraya. Wait a minute. They mourned for him. They embalmed him. They turned him into a mummy and buried him. What do you mean he didn't die? Amarle, no, mikrati dars. This is a midrashic answer. It says, ata al-tira adi Yaakov, don't fear Yaakov, al-techa Yisrael. I write that, right? V'hini moshiacha mirachok etzarecha, I will bring your children back from the distance, me'er shivyam, from the land of their imprisonment. V'shav Yaakov, that Yaakov himself will come back, v'shakat, and live in peace, v'shanan, v'im acharid, and prosperity, and that we don't make him afraid. Making shoes of Aro, and Yaakov just like his children. Mazaro b'chayim, apu b'chayim. Midrashically, Yaakov never died as long as we are still alive carrying on the tradition. So that's the same way that Serach, I would read that. Not literally Serach is all there, but that tradition that's transferred from one generation to the next. The mimetic tradition. It's not ruptured. Then Serach but Asher lo met. So, okay, with all due respect to Chaim Soloveitchik, he says we've lost the touch of his presence, as Rav Soloveitchik, his father said, that we still have that. as long as we have a Jewish home and that experience there. So that's the story of Serach Bar Asher. When the symbol not of the learning, but of the living memory of what it means to be, what it means to be keeping the Torah and Judaism. So in the eyes of Chazal, in our parak, we have this contrast here between Yoav, that is general, the violet one, and the Isha Chachma, Sarah. And I would love to have more of the story of this sort of battle of wills as they're talking to each other across the wall. The Midrash fills in some of that. And it starts in that. The way the Midrash is actually on the pasuk in Kohelet. It says, Tova Chachma b'kli krav. Wisdom is better than weapons. And one sin can wipe out the good from many good deeds. And will like it make that much good. It just says on that, Tova Chachma, what does it mean that wisdom is better than weapons? That's the Chachma here. The Krav, the weapons, that was Yoav. That's the battle here. For instance, when it says, and it has a whole conversation here, I won't quote the whole thing. And when she says Yoav, you're Yoav, right? Love Akra, but by Torah, don't you know the Torah? You're supposed to be so smart. You're one of David's generals. You're supposed to be a Talmud Chacham too. Love David by Torah. Doesn't David know the Torah? Love Hichiti doesn't say that when you come to a city, you're supposed to come in peace first. That's what's supposed to happen. Yoav goes for the violence first. We know that.
Did he ever call out in peace?
He did not, right. The story is, as soon as he finds out, they start the siege weapons and they're going to knock down the walls. Yoav likes solving problems by stabbing people in the ribs. And in my mind, this is almost a contrast between the two aspects of David himself. Right? We've had this before, the Shmuel and the Tehillim David here. We're having this sort of psychological battle here. Who's going to win? Right? And then are we going to enforce, he's king of Israel, we're going to enforce the unity by killing everybody who differs, or the Serach Bar Asher unity, that we have a common history, a common destiny. And I'll point out the Serach is not a pacifist. Okay? Sheva B'Brichi is going to end up being dead by her Chachma. But she's saying you can't kill everybody else. She does prevail. She convinces Yoav the city of Avela does not become Avelut. There's no mourning there. And we'll see the end of, the nation will survive to the end of Shmuel and be able to build a Beit Midrash. The split will not happen for another 40 years in Sefer Melachim. We'll go back to our text. We've got Serach on the wall talking to Yoav, and this contrast is set up. Vayan Yoav Vayomar, so Yoav answers and says, Chalila Chalila Li, God forbid, Im Evla V'im Ashchit, I will not swallow up the city, I will not destroy anything. We don't have the, it'd be nice to see the rest of this conversation, we have some midrashic implications of that, but Yoav is convinced. Lokei Adavar, I have no intention of killing everybody. Ish Mehar Ephraim, because there's one person who lives in Har Ephraim, Sheva ben Bichri Shemo, after Sheva ben Bichri. Nasaya Dova Melach, he rebelled against the king, but David, Otolavado, that's all I want, Be'elcha, Tenu Otolavado, give him over to us, Be'elcha Me'alir, and I'll leave. Just give us Sheva ben Bichri. Atamra Yishal Yoav, so the woman says back to Yoav, Hinei Rosho Mishalecha Elecha, we will give you his head. From the wall. So the woman now turns back to the rest of the city and tells them in her wisdom and says something. We don't have that. And they do not turn Sheva Bichri over to Yoav. They cut off Sheva Bichri's head. And they throw the head at Yoav. So Yoav blows the shofar, calls everyone off. They sue me al ear, and they leave the city. Yishal Alav, they all go back to their tent. Yoav Shav, Yerushalayim Al-Melech, and Yoav goes back to Yerushalayim. That's the end of the story. Still pretty violent. So.
That takes you back to the story of David and Goliath.
Cutting off the head, right. That's the sign that, okay, that Serach is not arguing that we are going, right, we should need to save Sheba ben Bichri. She agrees he needs to be dead, but you don't have to kill everybody else to get there. We can figure this out. So, well, at this point, what I should do is deal with the halakhic implications of this parah. Right? What happens? This idea that, you know, you have the army camped around the city demanding this person, and question, do you give someone over to someone who's threatened? This is the Yerushalmi. Tani. Sayopere Adam, Shayu Mahalkin Badera. A caravan that's going on the way. Pogulahen Goyim, and I'm gonna blame non-Jews, right? Highwaymen, they're ambushed. But Amru Tnu Lanu Echad Mikem, Banero Goto. We want one of you, and we're gonna kill him. Im Lav Hare Ana Hogim and Kulchem. Otherwise we're gonna kill all of you. What do you do in that situation? The trolley problem. Can you be give someone over to save everybody else's life? I feel called Kula Neharagim, Lo Yimisru Nefesh Achat Yisrael. The answer is you can't give one person over. You try to defend yourself, but even if they're all be killed, you cannot turn someone over. Yichdu Lahen Echad, if they specified, not give us any one, but here, we want this one person, like this case here of Sheba Bichri. In that case, you should give them over and don't let the rest of them die. Lakish says, "Who is she? Yechayev mita kishem bichri." And it's kishem ben bichri, meaning that you have to agree that he's actually guilty. That you don't have to save such a person and sacrifice your own lives. Rabbi Yochanan Amar says, "No, apal pish eno chayev mita, even though he's not kishem ben bichri, still you're allowed to be moser one person over there." And that. Huge discussions, but I'm not going to go there. Because I don't know enough about the halakhas there. If you're in such a situation, you have to decide who to sacrifice to save everybody else. Contact your local Orthodox rabbi. I just want to point out that the comparison here is that Chazal is saying, hey, who is that Yoav, who's demanding this, are like Pogo ben Goyim, right? What he's doing is not a Jewish thing. It's Serach who's doing the Jewish thing. And trying to save the city. And we'll finish with what happens then. Here's the end of the story. Yoav Shav Yerushalayim El HaMelech. Yoav goes back. Seems there's no consequence to this whole thing. No repercussions. What is the story teaching us? What is it doing here? Why do I care? Because I think there really was a long-term consequence of this battle. And we quoted the Medrash about that. That it talked about the Tova Chacham Mimikli Krav, that wisdom is better than weaponry. That's from Kohelet. But look at the context of that quote from Kohelet. Shlomo says, "The Gamzer Iti, I have seen this. Chachma Tachashem, I have seen wisdom under the sun. Udolahi Eli, and it was wonderful. It was great. Yir Ketanav and Hashim Bama. There was a small city with few people. Uva Eliha Melch Gadol, a great king came against it. The Sabbath of Ta and surrounded and built siege engines against it. And there was a poor wise man there, and he saved the city in his wisdom. But Adam and no one remembers this wise, poor man. But Marty, and I said it then, and the Tova that wisdom is better than strength. Even though the wisdom of the poor, of this poor, is despised, and no one listens to the wisdom. Still, wisdom is greater than weapons. But the words of the wise are best heard in quiet. Nizakat Moshel B'Ksilim are heard even better than the cries of a ruler among fools. The Vachach Magdegra, Klei Krav, that wisdom is better than weapons. Chotechat yaved tovah harbeh, but one sin can eliminate much good. And that's the paragraph from Kohelet. And that certainly sounds familiar. And this is the Dat Mikra, the Moser Rav Kook commentary on Kohelet by Mordechai Zera Kavod. And what he says is that this story, it's anonymized, and clearly in context of Kohelet, it's a metaphor. But the idea, there was a small city that was saved by an old wise from Ish, but names have been changed to protect the innocent. Akrova biyoter, what seems the most likely to me, Zohi to Hamasa Evel Bet Macha, that to identify this little story, the basis for this metaphor, for this mashal, is the story of Evel Macha. The Gama Lovni Drash Kama Pursuk, that the Midrash already says is connected to Tovach Chachma Kikarav, Achem Midarabada, in many ways, Noten Pusukenu, that our Sukim here in Kohelet can be explained, the Faresh Ade Mara, who can be explained with reference to this incident. So the story that we're looking at, the story of Sheva ben Bichri in the war of Evel ben Macha and the siege, and this Ish Achachma, Shlomo was 8 years old. 4 years from now, he's going to be king of Israel, and he asks Hashem for one thing. What does he ask for? He asks for wisdom. Right, we know that. Yivon Nira Hashem El Shlomo, Shlomo is built, when he comes king, offers sacrifices in the Mishkan and Gibeon, and Hashem appears to him B'chalom HaLaila in a dream. Yomer Elokim Sh'al Ma'atem Lach, and Hashem asks, you ask, what do you want? I'll give it to you. And then what he asks for is, Natata Adcha Lev Shemo L'Shpat. Shemo says, I want a heart wise enough to judge, Adamecha La'avim Ben Tovara, to judge your nation between good and evil. Kimi Yechol L'Shpat Amcha HaKaveh Azeh, because who else can judge such a large nation? Ten Elokim Chachmo L'Shmo, so Hashem gave wisdom to Shlomo. Much understanding. His understanding was broad as this, as a sand on the sea. So Shlomo is quoted as saying, I saw wisdom and it was great. It was wonderful. That's how I know that how much greater wisdom is than weapons. It seemed that that was what he was seeing. He saw the story of Yoav versus Serach. And it's rebellion, and there, and that's what he gets this Torah de Mecha. That's what Serach teaches Shlomo later on, and that's what it means when it says that Eish HaChayel that Piachach HaChachma. This is Serach. That Shlomo is saying that the woman whose wisdom saves the city. That was this Eish HaChachma, and that's where he learned. That's what Shlomo's entire kingdom was based on, not on war, but on trade and making peace with the nations around him. It really does have an ongoing influence here and allows us to serve as the introduction to Sefer Melachim and to the Chachmat Shlomo. But I will stop here. Next week is Tisha B'Av, we're not gonna learn. And I will stop the recording.